Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. So the other day I was out for a run, and I was thinking to myself, how do people who run marathons get all the way to the end in their mind? Because we're living through this COVID quarantine and the time has been added on to the back end, so the race feels like it just keeps being extended. And when you come around a corner when you're running a race, sometimes you think the end is near and you come around the corner and you see it's still very far away. So what's the mindset of a person like that? So I started thinking, who do I know who's run a marathon? And then I started thinking to myself, well, who else do I know? And then it hit me, Danny Pfeiffer. Danny Pfeiffer is a friend of ours who is actually an Ironwoman. She ran in the Hawaii Ironman, swam and biked in that difficult condition. So I thought I'd call her up and find out what is the mindset of people who are so resilient like you are, and how do hyper-hearted people get through things like that, and what can we learn from her mindset, and what do you model around your world? You see, Danny's a mother, she's a wife, she's got three kids, and she is the ultimate athlete. So I called him up and I had a conversation with her and Blake, her son, who's a senior in high school, to find out what it is like to be her and how we can learn from her and what we can learn from her as we try to go through COVID. As you listen to her talk, don't get caught up in all the cool things that she's done. Break it down. Make it real for yourself. Think about her mindset. Think of how she sets short-term goals. Think of how she looks for little motivators along the track and along the routes. Think about how she gets through these ultimate races, because that's what we're living in. We're living in the ultimate race, and the people who will win on the end are the people with the right mindsets, the people who find motivation, and as she says, sometimes to win the race, you need to slow down. So here they are, Danny and Blake Pfeiffer from Port Washington, Wisconsin.
Danny and Blake, welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I appreciate you guys giving me some time today.
Thank you, Ted.
Yeah, thanks.
Glad to be here.
So I have Danny Pfeiffer, who I've known for a good chunk of her life because she is a friend of my brother's and somebody who we grew up with here in Port Washington, Wisconsin. But I brought Danny and invited her and her son to be on the podcast today because they do something very unique competitively. And I wanted to hear how they maintain their mindsets as they go through the different races and competitions that they compete in. So Danny, could you introduce yourself and give us a little background, mom, sister, all the unique things about Conrad girls?
Yeah,
and the world needs
forgot about that. I'm a mom of three, senior, sophomore, sixth grader, work part-time in finance for my brother-in-law here in Port Washington. I just turned 45 years old. Which when you know triathletes, that is you're not afraid to say your age. It's a very big part of what you do, what age group you're in. I'm also very proud to be the president of a nonprofit group in Port Washington called B3, the nonprofit group for women. And we focus on combining fitness with philanthropy and helping others in our community, doing a variety of things. To date, in the past 5 years, we've raised over $100,000, and donated that back to the community and local charities.
That's awesome.
And we have over 200 members, including men and women in our fitness group, and ranging in age from 5 years old to actually our youngest member is four. Shout out to Henry Galke. And our oldest member is 80. So very proud of that group.
That is fantastic. And tell us a little bit about your background competitively. I mean, what got you started running?
Sure.
Is that something you did when you were in middle school, high school? Is it because of a parent?
I grew up doing gymnastics. I've always loved just to be active physically. When I look back at things I used to do when I was younger, my grandma lived a mile away and I did cartwheels all the way from my house to her house. So I think that started pretty young, just always liking that physical activity. From gymnastics through middle school, then high school. My gymnast friend went out for swimming, so I decided to go out for swimming for no good reason other than she did. And then, so I did swimming, and I competed in gymnastics and track. So those were my background in high school. Didn't really do much. Well, actually, I swam in college a couple years. And then after that, I didn't really do much when I was working and having kids. And then when my youngest was two, I decided I didn't really like my fitness routine. And I really wanted to get back to my, what I call no excuses mode, where no matter what the weather was or my fatigue level or what was going on, I was going to try to get back to something. And, I had previously done one marathon, and I thought, well, maybe I'll do another marathon or I'll do a triathlon. And then that was this summer of 2010. I read an article in the paper. There was a girl that I knew that didn't really have any athletic background, and she was doing a triathlon, and it kind of sparked something in me to say, well, you know, the whole adage, which is very helpful, if she could do it, I can do it. So naively, I got into it thinking, oh, I've run, I can swim, that's kind of a big part, and realized that the biking is a huge piece of it, and I knew nothing about biking. So I've spent the past 10 years, you know, really honing in on the skills. I've competed in probably close to 50, I think, you know, 10 years. I probably average about 5 per season here, which is summer. It's short here, so we have to cram a lot in. And competed in mostly Wisconsin, but I've done, with Blake, we did a race in Ohio. I've done Hawaii, a race there, and then just most recently competed in Switzerland. So been nice to travel, because those are places I probably wouldn't have gone. And I'm finding that events are kind of a good way to have an excuse to go do something somewhere else.
So just for background's sake, all right, triathlon, Ironwoman, yeah. Ironman, Olympic distance. What are the distances of these races? So, sure. You know, most people out there think of, you know, Weekend Warrior, they're going to go do a 5K. They're really excited if they're in the top 100 in their age group. I have a feeling you are not motivated by placing in the top 20 of anything. But what are
highly motivated by placing.
Oh, I would assume, but not like, you don't want to be 20th.
No, I want to win.
So what are the distances? You know, let's go. You raced at Kona in Hawaii. Yeah. Tell us what that is.
So to get there, you have to qualify at another race. And it's challenging because they only take one or two in your age group. So you have to be ready, and you have to have a great day. So that all started back in 2014 to qualify. And then as soon as you qualify, that next day, you go to an award ceremony and you have to claim your spot. So you're essentially deciding for Wisconsin to do a race a year later in Hawaii. So the distances for Ironman are 2.4-mile swim, and then a 112-mile bike, and then a 26.2, it ends with a marathon. The half iron distance is half of those distances, which is a really great race for many people to do regularly, because it doesn't, it's cheaper, it doesn't absorb much of your summer. It's a really, really great distance to do, but still challenging. So the half iron is a very common race, and those distances for the Ironman that are just cut in half. So that becomes a 1.2-mile swim, a 56-mile bike, and a half marathon, which is a 13.1-mile run. Then you get into the Olympic distance, which is what the Olympians compete in, and that is usually a 0.9-mile swim, a 40K bike, which ends up being a 25-mile bike, and then you end up with a 10K for a run, so a 6.2-mile run. And then you have all these different sprint distances, which is half the Olympic, which is, again, another great race of distance. So that new people can, that's how I got started. I was going to do one sprint in Par Washington, a local race. And the only reason I was going to do it was because it was a pool swim. I didn't want to swim in open water. So I thought I would do this sprint triathlon. That was the most nervous I've ever been for any race in my entire life. I had not competed in years, and I was nervous for 2 weeks before. I could not sleep. I could not eat. That is the most nervous I was ever in 2010. Core triathlon sprint distance.
Okay, I just need to back up because I'm mentally, you know, I have a degree in geography, Blake. So when your mom rattles off kilometers and miles, in my head, I immediately associate those with true distances. So yeah. Pipers, you live like 2.5 miles from me. So the idea of me swimming from my house to your house in open water with a ton of strangers.
Deal sure.
100, how many mile bike ride?
112.
And then you get off that bike and you run 26.22 miles.
Yes.
How have you done in those races?
How have I done?
Yes.
Good. How good?
So, Blake, I want to ask you a question. When your mom has that kind of a mindset of a champion, what does that do for you as a kid? Like when you're a little boy, so in 2010, you were 5, right?
Yeah, I really didn't know what she was doing back then. But then, I don't know, she got me into it a couple years after she kind of got going. I don't know, it might have been like 2012, 2014, somewhere around there that I did like my first couple races, like shorter races. And then I did an Olympic when I was in like eighth grade maybe. And then I just did my first half iron last summer. And then I'm going to do Ironman this summer. That's kind of how I got into it.
And what do you enjoy about it?
The grind kind of. I don't know, I just like pushing myself pretty much, yeah.
The challenge?
Yeah.
So that's what I want to talk a little bit about with both of you now is, so one of the things we're living in these historic times where we're kind of trapped inside. Mm-hmm. Just about 2 hours ago, I saw that in the state of Wisconsin, our state parks are now closed. And, you know, training and getting yourself ready for this mentally. I mean, what is a day like, Danny, you know, 60 days, countdown to race day?
Well, it varies. I mean, during the week, it's anywhere from 1 to 2 hours of workouts. And then the weekends, in the beginning, you might be like combined 3 to 4 hours. And then when it gets closer, it could be as much as 8 to 9 on the weekend. So it really changes throughout the year. I never really stopped training, so that makes ramping up easy. Most plans are about 20 weeks where things start to get longer.
And the reason I ask these questions is because the amount of perseverance people need to currently demonstrate is what got me attracted to the idea of reaching out to you guys to talk to you about, all right now you're months away from a race. And it would be very easy to just say, don't worry about it. What keeps you guys going?
I would say planning, goals, those are big. I would say for anybody who wants to do anything, you have to have concrete numbers and deadlines for yourself. So events are, I always say to people, it really, you don't have to do an Ironman. You don't have to do events, but they are really cool in one huge way. And that is, there's a deadline. And most people are motivated to get ready for something when they know something's looming. Now, if you don't prepare for it, it's going to be very painful. It's going to be very painful anyway. But you might as well, you're paying for it. You might as well get ready for it. And most people are motivated to at least try to do their best, even if their training isn't perfect. And a lot of people that I help informally coach, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about just that. Sign up for it. How do you get ready for it? That deadline is important. If you want to talk to triathletes, you'll find a strange group of people that plan out their life in multiple years at a time. I could have told you, you know, 3 years ago when I was going to do my next Ironman, when I thought I might go back to Kona if I was lucky enough to qualify, when we're going to do the next race, the next thing. So I think one thing that people can take away from that mindset with what we're going through right now is that what we're going through right now, as hard as it is, you know, there will be a light at the end of the tunnel. And luckily with today's data, it seems like it might be a little bit more sooner than later. And of course, there'll be challenges in the fall again. But you know, things will get better. When you look at things long term, I always find that time goes really quickly when you have a goal that's far away. All of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, summer's here. So to me, having that mindset of looking at something a little bit further down the road versus the frustration you might be feeling on any given day with not being able to do what you want to do is extremely helpful.
So that leads me to this. So Blake, the first time you competed, you had never experienced something like that before. So you really have no idea like how much farther this is going to be. You come around a turn on a street when you're making your run and you're like, oh, I thought I was done. How did you deal with that? Because I think that's what the world is dealing with now is, well, maybe in June you can go back outside, which is like the halfway point of a race right now for you. So how did you deal with that when you make that turn? How did you keep pushing yourself?
I don't know. I just always kind of knew the finish was coming. So if you go faster, it's going to come faster. So you just keep pushing.
Well, and I think that's the long distance view, right? You're always looking further down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What is your advice, Blake, to people your age? You know, you're a senior. I see all these posts on Facebook about the poor seniors. And I don't mean to say that in a demeaning way, but, you know, what is your advice for them on the long-term view that you just described of, yeah, we might not get our school year, but what do you think of that?
I mean, there's always like the next step. So, I mean, you just don't get to finish off the year, which, I mean, it sucks, but like there's always like the next thing. So I don't know, just look forward to the, you know, what's coming up, like college or working, whatever people are doing.
But it's kind of like the events, right? I mean, of the three, which is your least favorite, Blake?
Ooh, probably the swimming or the running. I don't know. I really like biking. Yeah.
I love them all and I hate them all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the different stages that we're in. I mean, I don't run nearly as much as you guys, but for 25 years, I've run 5 to 6 days a week. I have to switch up my routes. I come around certain corners. I hit certain paths and it's like, oh, this is all uphill for the next mile and a half. But you know, I always know that, hey, in 24 minutes or 38 minutes, I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
And what I want to know from you guys is, Danny, when you're in Kona, Hawaii, in an elevation and heat that we never get in Wisconsin.
No, it was pretty horrible.
What's in your head during those times? How do you get yourself through that? And then the other piece is, how does that struggle upon victory make you a better mom?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. In October here, it's great training weather, great training weather. So to go and do that race in October, I had a guy in my training group that frequently went to Hawaii to windsurf, and he kept saying, it's hot, it's windy. And I'm like, I know. And he kept saying it. And I'm like, you saying it, it doesn't make me feel any better. And I can't change it. I'm going. And I can't change it. So oddly enough, when we got there, the other two girls in my age group that qualified were a Canadian and a New Yorker. And I was like, we're all going to suffer. We are just going to suffer. You just cannot acclimate. And heat is such a huge factor in how you manage your race. Weather is huge. And your ego, you have to get rid of your ego. You think you're going to go fast, but when it's hot and windy, you are not. You're not going to like your time. You're not going to PR. So just get that off your plate right now and be humbled by the experience and concentrate on the execution and do the best you can. So when I went into that race, I already knew that I was going to have to bike slower and run slower. Swimming was sort of irrelevant. During the water, it was warm, but it wasn't any big factor. What's great about Hawaii is in the morning, it's not blistering hot. So while the days preceding it, when I would go to some training things with other people, we really did not talk about the heat. We almost ignored it. Everyone was dreading it. It was so hot that you were outside sweating, that hot. When the plane landed, I got off and I was hot standing there. I'm like, I'm in trouble. I don't know how I can do this for 11 hours in this heat. I can't even stand here. So what's nice about it, the race, when you start in the morning, it's warm, but it's not hot. So you never have a chance to really feel how hot it is. You're already moving. So the bike was a struggle. At the end, there wasn't any water at this aid station. It's amazing to me at these well-worn races that are world caliber races that they did not have a last water station with 10 miles to go. You see all sorts of things, but there are some things that floor me as a race organizer, like how you don't have water.
Essentially there. Nobody did that the first mile.
That was definitely a hard part. And then, of course, the run, you know, they talk about the lava fields and how hot they are. And you just really have to pace yourself. So I went at a pace that was about 30 seconds slower than what I would have wanted to do. And it ended up being the right pace. So, yeah, that was probably one of my most challenging races mentally, given the wind and the heat. So
you've swam, you've biked.
Yeah.
You're 16.2 miles into the marathon, no water. What?
No, that was at the end of the bike. The end of the bike was no water. End of the bike. Yeah.
How do you coach yourself through when there are those disappointments along the way here? So, like, and you're far from pessimistic because you're realistic and you're saying, I'm gonna run 30 seconds slower. I'm gonna do this on the bike. Water's irrelevant. But how do you pivot? Like, what is going on in your head, Danny? I run 4 miles in the morning, and I'm ready to throw my phone into the lake because I'm sick of the 12 songs I've listened to.
You're probably running too fast.
No, I can guarantee you I am not.
It's a constant state of talking to yourself. So you can only have one thought in your mind at a time, and it better be a positive one. So while negative thoughts come in, they don't live in my head very long, and they get shoved out, and there's many, many tricks. I mean, it would take an hour to go through them. I don't even know that I can even articulate what I do. I know that in an 11-hour race, I'm never bored. I don't know what that says about my mind space, but I'm never bored. It goes by very fast. It feels like, you know, maybe 4 hours, 5 hours, not 11. And some people, mind you, are out there for 17. So, yeah, the fastest ones, the pros will get done in, what, 8-9 hours?
Some do it under 8 hours. That's like the record.
And then you have...
Did you even drive that distance in under 8 hours?
That would be a challenge.
Easily.
So, constant talking to yourself, breathing, huge breathing, working on your form, making sure you're not getting excited, you're not trying to pass people too fast, being in a very, very patience and discipline. You have the whole day is about being patient. You can never go too fast at any one point. So you're constantly trying to hold yourself back. You know things are going to get hard, but you don't want to hit that wall. And if you do it right, you won't hit the wall. If you do it wrong, you're going to hit the wall.
So as you take that long view, I mean, you rattled off some incredible core values of just great leaders, perseverance, humility, execution, patience, discipline. Mm-hmm. Just give me one example of self-talk that you do, you know, in the middle of a race or training.
What I'm thinking about is breaking everything down into very, very small segments. The first half you just kind of do. You go slow, you pace yourself, and you do. But then the mind games start to play. So the easier it is in the beginning, because you do have to pace yourself, you don't need as many mind tricks. You can thank the volunteers, you can smile, you can look at the weather, you can be a little more aware of your surroundings. But as you go, the tunnel vision sets in, and you are just focusing on getting to the next aid station and breaking down, executing a strategy based on what mile I'm at, whether that be the bike or the run. Again, the swim isn't really, there's not a lot of strategy in the swim other than don't be stupid and blow up. But everything else is like goals within the goal. So for example, biking. Halfway in a race for a 112-mile bike, you think you feel good, you better feel good at halfway. If you are any bit tired halfway, or really struggling, you have gone too fast. So you need to get to halfway with as least energy expenditure as possible. And then from there, you kind of break it out into, you might do a 10-mile chunk. The run is always kind of in 3-mile segments. What's great about spectators is when my family's out there, I know that I'm going to see them at mile 13. And then again at some other later point. So that becomes kind of a little carrot out there to try to think about how to get from that segment to the next segment, always feeling in control. And in control of your pace, because once you've gone too fast, then you're slowing down and you're walking and now you're not in control of your execution. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, well, so you're breaking it down in smaller chunks and goals, getting yourself yes. a long view in the shorter period of time. The, like you said, the different things that you have in your head. And the reason for that is, the reason I really am sticking on the self-talk point for you and Blake is because everyone carries a narrative in their mind
and
your own narrative determines your success. You know, if you're going to have a bad day, it's because your narrative is driving you to that. If you're going to, if you're going to excel, it's because your narrative says I can do this. I'm guessing when you're running that course and you're seeing people down on the ground and all those different pieces, it's because of the narrative in their mind. My favorite example, my father-in-law always talks about Bruce Jenner. When they would watch him on TV in the 70s, when he would compete as an athlete or an Olympian, if he would win, he could run that stadium multiple times with a flag. If he took second, he was on the ground exhausted and near death. And he said, there's just got to be something there. So with that, Blake, here's what I want to ask you. I want to get off triathlons and look and focus on you for a second, because you are a state qualifying wrestler. You have been wrestling. I think you came out wrestling because it's a Piper thing. You've cousins, your clubs, you're always grappling. What is the mindset for you as you step onto a mat each time that it, you know, every time you wrestle, I'm guessing has significance, but when you step into regionals and sectionals, what is your mindset and how do you get through that? Because wrestling is probably one of the most difficult sports, because while you do suit up and ride the bus with a team, at the end of the day, it's you in the circle.
I try not to have anything in my head. I try and have it as like blank as possible.
Sorry.
Yeah, because that's usually when I mess up, it's because I get in my own head and I'm thinking too much. But if I'm on autopilot, that's usually when I'm doing my best. Like, no thoughts. Yeah.
Well, I mean, one of the interesting things to me about wrestlers is that you know most of the people you're wrestling against.
Yeah, right? You do.
You know about them, you know what club they're in, you know their moves, and it's just all about execution. So, yep. I mean, when you say you have nothing in your head, what are you relying upon, you know, each move, each situation that you get yourself into?
I mean, I'm just relying on the hours that I put in, you know, months ago, that, you know, all the technique, all the strength training, all that stuff. I'm just relying on that to kind of carry me through. Because, I mean, it's not really like, it's everything happens too quick for you to like think like, oh, I should shoot now or I should block it or whatever. And you just gotta have your mind do it subconsciously. You can't think about it.
Well, and the reason I ask that is because I've never met a wrestler who walks out with a notepad and they're like, okay, step one's gonna be, then I'm gonna do it, because it's all response. But it's based upon something I think is really important, which is routines. You go to practice and you do the same things over and over and over again. And it's the same thing with your mom and being a triathlete. These are routines. And through the COVID times, if you are routineless, those negative narratives take over very quickly. You know, I read an article prepping for this conversation about people who, you know, I did a triathlon without training and here's what I learned. Well, I can imagine you learned a lot about pain.
Yeah, well,
that's what the article said. The article said that I'm not as resilient as I thought I was. I'm not as in shape as I thought I could be. So here's a question for both of you. And Danny, I'd like you to start so Blake can have some think time here. But how do you get through your pits of pessimism?
I would say unrelenting optimism. So if you are optimistic, there is no chance for pessimism. I think it goes back to the one thought in your head. It better be a good one. So while I may have some moments, I really try my best to shove them out of my head. I think if I had to pinpoint probably what's the most challenging, it's not necessarily during a race, but it's injuries leading up to a race. I, for myself and other people within our group, that requires probably some of the most mental strength because it does derail you from your routine. Now, luckily with triathlon, when you're injured, we debate what the best injury is. An arm injury, oh, that's good. You can still bike. Blake hurt himself. What did you do?
What time?
Concussion? No, concussion? No, what was your?
Stress fracture.
Shoulder. He just had a shoulder injury that plagued him. Tendon that would pop out that kind of threatened the end of his career at high school, but he managed to do very well at the end despite that. But point being, we were talking about the shoulder injury, and we both look at each other, we're like, well, at least you can bike and run. So you have to, in those moments of injury, you have to be smart, you have to get I like to look at that challenge like a lot of challenges, and I would even equate to what's going on now. The idea of a setback or a problem, if you look at it as a challenge, and that is, I think, how an optimist frames things as a challenge. If you're more of a pessimistic mindset, you might just focus on the problem. But if you focus on a challenge, then it lends itself to a solution, right? So what are you going to do? So if you're injured, you need to take time off. You need to work on your muscle imbalances, your flexibility, your strength in that area of injury. So then the challenge now becomes, well, how do I fix it? And what do I learn from it? How do I avoid it in the future? So injuries are probably the most threatening to, a positive mindset. And I would say a physical therapist, obviously physical, they help you get better physically. My physical therapist, shout out to Brooke Holmes, she is a godsend. And very, very helpful, helps keep me healthy. I could not do this without her, but she is every bit as important psychologically to me, because when I'm not feeling optimistic about my recovery, she's optimistic about my recovery, and she'll tell you it's not as bad as you think, and this is what you need to do. She gives you your exercises, she checks in with you a couple days later, and another example of having patience in recovery, you just have to let your body heal. You cannot... You're not superhuman. You're not going to fix it overnight. So I would say injuries and how to overcome them probably the most challenging aspect of that.
So before like, you go, like, I mean, so what you
what
said,
was that?
Danny, is, you know, so one of the pieces that regular listeners to the podcast hear about all the time is this idea about being a buffalo. And a buffalo is a person who optimistically charges into the storms that are ahead of them. And you just identified two really strong qualities of that type of a leader and person. And the first is every problem is an opportunity for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is always lean on other people in your life to coach you through those little pits so that they can bridge it for you. So, you know, great shout out to Brooke Holmes. I coach both her daughters. And
she's amazing.
Yeah, she's just got a very subtle, calm confidence to her.
But again,
and Blake, I think this is a great life lesson for you. It's who you surround yourself with. You know, you're going to soar if you surround yourself with eagles, and you're going to squat if you're hanging out with buzzards. So, Blake, what's your mindset as you go through those pieces? How do you get out of the pessimistic things? You faced some challenges in your young life already with, you know, injuries and setbacks for, you know, wrestling and running and other things. So how do you get through it?
I mean, I kind of like being in those, like, dark places. It kind of sounds weird, but yeah, I like being in it because I know, like, when I get out, I'm going to be, like, way better for, you know, having gone through that. So, I mean, when I'm in it, like, I just try and remain positive and know that, you know, it's going to come to an end eventually. But then, you know, I'm always thinking, like, yeah, this will make me better while I'm here. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but even that's, I mean, while you say you enjoy being in the dark place, that's how your mom and I would frame that, is you appreciate the challenge of having to improve mm-hmm. yourself to get better.
Yeah, I know it takes hard work to get better, so.
But it's a lot of people your age, and frankly your mom and my age, who would prefer to wallow in that and enjoy being in those pits where it's like, oh, look at me, you know, it's the Eeyore mindset. Mm-hmm. So Blake, now I'm going to start with you on this question. With your mom's blind optimism, and there's nothing that can that can ever get in her way. What's that like to grow up in that environment?
It definitely helps because, I mean, she kind of like pulls me along to do stuff. And I mean, she like gets me into everything. So, yeah, I mean, it helps a lot for sure.
Is it harder?
They hear me say very often, don't tell me why you can't. If they want to push my buttons, they'll tell me why they can't do something.
Huh?
I mean, you can probably outrun your mom in a short sprint. What's it feel like to hear that when your mom says stuff
just
like
that? Just a short sprint. That's it. That's maybe.
But I mean, all he has to do is be able to get away after he answers this question and he'll survive.
Yes.
What's that like? My kids always talk about, you know, because I'm blindly optimistic. Oh my gosh, what a great opportunity. I can't believe, you know, we can't leave the house. This is going to be great. We can eat. We can do this. We can watch movies.
Yeah.
And they're like, and most people can't get past the, like, we can't leave the house. So how, I mean, in that environment, like, what's that like?
Being able to not leave the house. I mean, I kind of like it. I don't know.
No.
It's cool.
Being trapped with an optimist who's like, this
you
provides
being
this
annoyed by me.
Why don't we bike to Canada today, Blake?
No, I kind of like it. I don't know. It's better than having a pessimist for a parent. So
That's an optimistic twist on that. You're talking to the wrong child. Who you need to interview is Taylor. She probably likes to challenge my optimism the most, which I just let her. Yeah, kids are always going to be sort of the opposite, or at least try to be the opposite of what you're trying to preach. And I don't mind that. I want them to express those dissenting opinions. And then I always say, you don't have to believe what I say, but just listen to it. And if you agree with it, you can have it be your own opinion. But I'm not trying to raise robots.
Well, and I think the important part for parents is that it's not really always what you say, it's what you do. But my point is that as parents, I think that it's what we model that really produces, you know, the outcomes for our kids, and they get to make their choices along the way. And, you know, in our home environments, we get that. So last question for you, because obviously there is no quit at the Pfeiffer House, is what advice do you have for other families as they try to be resilient through these challenges? So we heard about when you race and those different components, but what do you two have for other families? Because, you know, we're probably halfway through this right now. It's April 9th.
Yeah.
And what do you want them to do to build resilience?
Well, we talked about, you know, the idea of looking ahead. It's not going to last forever. I think some of these things are disappointing, like, you know, looking at graduation being changed or sports not being played. Incredibly disappointing when high school careers are changed. But, you know, at any point in your life, you're not guaranteed any of these experiences. Something could happen to you, an accident, an illness, something with one of your family members. We're not guaranteed any of these culminating events. So I think if anything, this time should be letting us appreciate what we do have, what we were able to do before this shutdown, and what we will be able to do next year. How can this not give us a better appreciation for all those things that we get to do? And with that, looking at kind of how you mentioned, I see a ton of good coming out of this right now. I've seen more people walking. I've seen more people running. I've seen more people with their pets outside. I've seen way more family walks. I'm hearing about family dinners, kids with families with kids in college, you know, they're home and probably will never get to experience this kind of family time for good or for bad. you know, there's so many, I think, blessings in this challenge. Also, I'm looking forward to all the innovation that's going to come out of, you know, this downtime. It is a chance for people to innovate and to problem solve. And so I look at it as like, wow, I'm just amazed by the healthcare workers and all of the great things going on. And I feel very hopeful for the future in terms of what it's going to produce. And I think that parents can talk to their kids about those things and constantly try to help them frame it in a way that helps them feel better about what they're doing today and what they're going to be doing, you know, in the future. So,
Blake, what's your advice for kids your age?
Definitely like trying to work out a little bit, like what she said, like 20 minutes a day, that's a good goal to have. I mean, you can definitely take a break from, I guess, like being on your phone or video games or whatever for 20 minutes. Like, that's no big deal. And then I don't know, just like try and again appreciate this time, like hang out with your family, that kind of thing. Do stuff that you didn't have time for when there was school and work and all that. So just try and better yourself, I guess.
Well, and you guys, you've been awesome, because I think, and as people have been listening while we've done little anecdotal stories about different pieces and places of racing and competing and life and family, there's nuggets of inspiration in all of this, because again, the reason I wanted to talk to you was this is a long haul marathon, and this is kind of the hare and turtle stage of where we're at. There are people trying to sprint to think that, you know, we got to get outside, we got to get back to work, we got to get the business, and our health is potentially at risk. And then there are others who are just taking the day-to-day, hour-by-hour goal approach, which you so positively described that you live by, Danny, and a little bit with Blake. So with that,
yes,
I really appreciate you guys coming on the podcast. I think this was awesome. And I
Great.
Look forward to hearing that, what people have to say and what and how you've inspired them.
That's awesome. Thank you, Ted.
So now that you heard from them, let's do some smart thinking. Did you hear her say, be humbled by the experience? What are you doing to stay humble through this experience? And one mindset for you to think about. Describe this quote and how it applies to you. Danny said, time goes quickly when you have a goal that's far away. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Hey, as always, thank you for listening. Please don't be afraid to share this on your social media platform. Please rate us on iTunes to help us grow the podcast so that we can help more people with our mission. And finally, thank you to the Well Pennies for their great music. Last, Blake, Charlie, all the seniors out there that everyone is so worried about for you, I think we need to take Mrs. Pfeiffer's advice. Look at the long view. Know that time will go by fast. Be patient. Be realistic. Slow down. Look for the little motivators. Stay in control. And finally, as Blake said, rely on what you know.
Hey, put the world away. Fight a little longer until you feel okay. 'Cause there's nothing I can do. When everything's the matter, there's no one left like you. Wait, wait for the sunlight. Love or leave, what life would I lose? Ooh la la, ooh la 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 la. Don't you wanna feel it too? That way, but hope's a honey in the air, a melody around you, and no one else is there. Wait, wait for the sun. Feel it too, and heal your heart. too.